This is KRCU's Going Public. I'm Dan Woods. Today we spend our time with Darren Bergfeld. He is Chief Human with Humans of CAPE. The project shares first-person stories along with photography, showcasing people throughout the Cape Girardeau area and in southeast Missouri. Darren dropped by our studios to tell us all about Humans of CAPE. Hey, Darren.
How you doing?
Good. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. So tell us first, I guess, a little bit about yourself. Tell us about Darren.
So Darren is a big old husky fella who also works in radio at another place here in town. I guess I'm a kind of a gregarious person who loves people. By nature, I just love meeting new people. I don't mind eating lunch alone. I'm the kind of guy that just, I like adventure.
Okay.
Me personally, I'm a musician. I'm a dad. I got a couple kids. I play in a few bands here locally. And I just love life. I like having fun. And when this project came about, this kind of became a way for me to meet new people and not only have that little treasured nugget of something I found out about them for myself, but I'm able to share it with everybody else too.
Yeah. So for those who don't know about Humans of CAPE, What is it?
So Humans of CAPE, it's not a unique project in that it doesn't, you know, this is not the first iteration of this type of concept. It takes inspiration from Humans of New York, which is kind of where all this started. Brandon Stanton, he is the guy who founded Humans of New York back in 2010, I believe.
Okay.
And essentially what he did, this guy, in a nutshell, he was a day trader, was getting burned out on that. And he was also a photographer by hobby and a very good one. And he decided that he was going to take a break, de-stress from his stock day trader environment thing that he had going on there. And he was going to take pictures of 10,000 New Yorkers. And he wanted to publish basically a coffee table book or have a gallery showing or something of his photography. So he's taking these beautiful pictures of humans in their element.
Yeah.
And nobody cared. Nobody cared. Nobody liked these pictures. And long story short, he started realizing that, of course, as he's getting these people comfortable for these pictures, these are strangers he's meeting on the streets of New York, he'd have a conversation. And it dawned on him that when he would marry the conversation or part of the conversation he was having with the image of this person, took off like wildfire. Because people saw the photo and then got that story and could hear that voice or see that person's voice, so to speak, you know, in that story. And so it was fascinating, and it captivated people all around New York and eventually all around the world. And so fast forward to 2019 when we launched Humans of CAPE. But this time there's, you know, iterations of Humans of all over the country. It's all, it's not, you know, an organized group. It's all grassroots. There's Humans of St. Louis, and I've been in touch with her. She is absolutely awesome and does amazing stuff with Humans of St. Louis. But again, you know, we kind of draw from inspiration from what they're doing, whether it's long format stories or just a couple quotes or what they're doing with their photography, and able to kind of mold that into Humans of CAPE. And so Humans of CAPE was born of Element 74, where I worked at the time. Chris Edmonds, who was the owner and president of Element 74, his wife had got him a Humans in New York book for Christmas the previous year, 2018. And he just, you know, ate it up, read it cover to cover. And that spring of 2019, he kind of came to my team and said, hey, I would love to do a Humans of CAPE project. I would love to do something like this, but for our area. And I was immediately just like, oh, heck yeah, man, let's dive. Please, if you make this happen, let my team do it because I want to dive in on this. And so fast forward to that summer, we had a gap in our work where we could make this happen. You know, it was just a for us project. Nobody was making any money off of this at all.
Yeah.
We were spending money to do it. But we did it and collected those initial stories to launch the project. And I just immediately fell in love with it. And was basically handed the reins to the project after we took it live. So it kind of went from being my team's baby to my baby. Element 74 still very graciously hosts the website and the email and everything for me, so I don't have to worry about the technology falling apart, which is beautiful.
Yeah,
And it's really just kind of opened up this gate. And so here we are, you know, almost a couple years later. I guess it'd be August will be 2 years. And, you know, we've got hundreds of stories and wonderful people that we're sharing them with, and it's a lot of fun.
So what has the response been here in the CAPE area to the project?
Response has been good. It's interesting to me because I don't directly associate myself with it. So if you go to Humans of CAPE website or the Facebook or whatever, if you go to the About Us, you'll maybe see a picture of me there. But it's not about the Darren show or the Chris show or the, you know.
Right.
It's about the people in the stories. And so by that, unless somebody knows me and associates me with the project, I don't get a lot of direct feedback other than what I read on the social media. on the post, mm-hmm. and emails that come into the site on occasion. But the majority of the reaction is on social media, and it's gorgeous to me to see how this melting pot of people in the Boot Heel, in Southeast Missouri, and beyond. Of course, the stories reach outside of our borders. But in our area, people that I know reacting to people that I've met or talked to, you know, to see the chemistry between people that you would never in real life put in the same room. But here they just love what that person had to say. So the reactions have been great. Not all the stories are good stories. Some of them are downers. But the compassion that the majority of the readers put into the stories when they comment, when they say, I'll be praying for you, or, you know, how can I give some help? Or this is an amazing story. Thanks for sharing this. This inspired me to go, you know, jump on the back of a cow or whatever it might be that they wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, so it's been really cool to see people react to, people share the stories, and just in general, that positive feedback that I know that that's sending that message that I want to send.
So how do you find your humans?
Most of them, well, I won't say most. The majority are typically random, kind of just in the moment. I've actually had stories where, you know, I'll see driving down the street and I'll see somebody on the sidewalk and stop and talk to them. For whatever reason, I felt like I needed to talk to that person. Yeah. And then sometimes it's, you know, you're in a parking lot and you just happen to strike up a conversation with the guy next to you, and he starts telling you this story or something, or one of those kind of serendipitous moments where you're like, hang on one second, can I tell you about my Humans of Cape project, and would you be cool with me telling this story? And then, yeah, cool, we spin it out and get the story later. And a good handful of them are people that I know, or my friends, my family. A couple of my kiddos are in there too. And I share those because although they're close to me and I may know every stinking thing about that person, 98% of the people reading it don't.
Yeah.
So to them, that's a stranger that they learn. And that's the cool thing, is there's never a shortage of subjects, ever. There's always humans. There's everybody in the studios here, everybody on campus has a story to tell. You know, so if I have the opportunity to talk with them, if they'll give me the opportunity to listen, then I can collect that story, and if they're cool with it, share it with the world. And we share them anonymously. You know, we want to make sure that people feel comfortable and have the ability to be open about it. If they choose that they don't want their face in the photograph, I can make that work as well. But
what are some of the more, like, wow stories that you've collected? They're like, wow, it just sticks with you. It's just one of those that's just out there. You just,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had some good ones. You know, it was actually the first accidental story I collected, I guess. I had gone down to CoinOp in downtown Cape to meet a friend of mine to do a story. I was going easy mode. I was going to meet my friend, have a brew, grab a story and a picture.
Gotcha.
And while I was waiting for him, there were two CMO students in there, two girls. And I was chatting with the bartender because I knew him, and I said what I was there for. And they're like, oh, that sounds cool. And I was like, cool, you want to be a story too? Because I can always get another story, you know?
Yeah.
And the two of them started chatting. And the story, what impressed me about it was they were obviously Ozzie and Harriet here. You know, the complete opposites and interesting students, but they had they met through a trip to China through the university. So it was a student trip. And the more they talked about it, the more fascinated I was, because the story wasn't your typical, you know, oh, we saw lots of Chinese architecture and it was really cool kind of thing. You know, they talked about, which was something that I really wasn't aware of at the time, is of the oppressive state against the Muslims that's going on in Western China. And politically, it's a nightmare. But I wasn't familiar with it. And when she started talking about this in the story, hearing this from the perspective of somebody that I honestly would have been pretty judgy and not expected this to come out of, you know, to hear that story was a great perspective. I can give you a quote from what she said. She said, the farther west you go, the more American, the more Western it looks because of the money. And they've got little plastic dolphins and flamingos and things, landscaping, and it's so weird, honestly. Our train stopped where the Muslim concentration camp started in China. They said, you can't go further west because we haven't built the railroads, but you could see the tracks went on. We just can't travel further because they have Muslim concentration camps in China that they will not let Western people see. So they're killing and infiltrating Muslim culture in China. And we were so close to it, like an hour and a half away from that province. That's terrifying. They were killing and doing that to Muslim people in China. They want the eradication of all religion. All of it. There's no churches, nothing, no hospitals. It's hard to fathom. I don't think in the next 20 years people will be able to go to China. So that's part of that story.
Wow.
And that took me for a loop. You know, I was like, obviously, I don't want to put something out there that's absolutely blown out of the water. And so I dig in a little bit, you know, on the story. And I'm like, man, you know, this is a serious condition and I'm not aware of it. So that story stuck with me because, A, it was one of the very first ones I had. And, B, proved to me that the adage of don't judge a book by its cover is absolutely true. And that applies a lot with Humans of Cape stories, I think. I mean, with this project, there's almost a little level of guilt that I want people to feel when they see – the initial impression is always the image. Okay. That's what they're going to get on the website and the social media. When you go there, boom, here's a picture. And we are all naturally judgy of our fellow man. Not always in a bad way. But you make an assessment. It's a fight or flight reaction. You make an assessment of this person. Are they a threat? Are they a friend? Are they going to hook me up with something? Are they going to beat me over the head with a stick? And so a lot of people see that picture and they make an assumption based on that image. And then they go in and read that story. And they may be flipped up 180 degrees on what they thought they understood about that person just from that image. And so for some people, when they read a story like that or like another one that's in the myriad of stories that we've got, they may, you know, get a little culture correction maybe, or a little self-check into, yeah, maybe I'm being a little overly judgy on people. So that one was stuck with me because of the Muslim story along with it. Another one, a story that really stuck with me, it was my first multi-part story, I guess first long format story.
Okay.
Instagram limits you to 2,000 characters per post. So if I have a story that goes beyond that, I've got to split it up into chapters or segments or however you want to do it. So it was a two-part story, and the fella, a lot of people know this guy, but they don't know this guy. His name's Michael, and he's a very good friend of mine. I've known him for a long time, but he also, he walks everywhere. He walks to the mall. If you've worked at a mall or a bank over in West Cape, chances are you've met Michael. Michael has a severe speech impediment, and so he's hard to understand when you talk to him. I've known him because in a former life, I had a lot of friends and a wife at the time who was from Charleston that grew up with him.
Okay.
And so, but Michael at Element 74, he'd stop by our office at least a couple times a week, say hi to everybody. Friendliest guy in the world. Absolutely harmless. Anybody that met him, loves a good old Michael hug. But when he was out of high school while he was still down in his hometown of Charleston, he dealt with a lot of bullying, mainly because of his speech impediment and his mental acuity, you know. But he, long story short, Michael worked at a grocery store there in town, had been picked on by some town guys, blah, 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 blah. Michael, that flight or flight reaction kicked in and he took off. He was 21 years old. Now, Michael is, you know, he doesn't have a car. He hasn't had a car since then, but you can read the entire story and hear about his journey, but here's the quote that I wanted to give you. He said, "I felt like the only option I had was to run away. I went home and I wrote a letter explaining everything, how this girl would be nice to me and then people would make fun of me and pick on me. I wrote about my supervisor and about these two guys that threatened me. All of the problems I had. I went to bed. I got up around 6 a.m. I felt like if I didn't leave, I would get killed. It was May 21st, 1996. I was 21. I had some clothes and about $400. My mom went to work early, and after she was gone, I got in my car and headed west. My mom came home and found the letter I had written on the table, telling her everything that happened. I was supposed to work that day, and later my supervisor called looking for me, but no one knew where I was, just that I was gone." And without big spoiler alerts, because I do want people to read that story, Mike made it to California. Getting there was, he was like driving in fear that entire time to California. It's hard to imagine. All that said, here we are, you know, years later, and Mike's living a great life. And he's got great friends that love him all over town. They get to see him because he was able to elevate out of that position. But it's a great story to me because I've known him since those days, and I remember that incident happening because I was in college at the time, and I just remember my ex-wife's mom worked with him at the grocery store, and she said, "Michael's disappeared. Nobody knows what happened to him." And it was pretty scary. But everything turned out good. No spoiler alerts.
We're going public today with Darren Bergfeld, chief human with Humans of Cape. So I can't imagine how many stories you've collected so far.
Oh,
probably
sure.
Probably a ton. What have you learned about it? What have you learned about the region? What have you learned about yourself maybe that you didn't know before the project?
As somebody who grew up locally and spent the majority of my life within 100 miles of the dirt that I first stepped foot on, it taught me a lot about the diversity of anywhere, not just Southeast Missouri. Because of the times that I have traveled and lived in Texas and, you know, been in certain cities, there's certain things that everyone in their hometown takes for granted. I think before I started doing the Humans of Cape stuff, I liken this, the path of these stories, a lot to driving. I like to drive. I'm the driver's seat guy. Family okay. trip, beep, beep, I'm Clark Griswold. But what we find in our day-to-day journeys, whether we're going, you know, you're leaving the house, you're going to work, you go to the coffee shop, go to work, you got your routine in the morning.
Right.
There's your road, you're looking at your road, you're not paying attention to what's going on down the alleys and what's going on down the sidelines. And this opened up a lot of that for me, because while I'm, you know, going through my day-to-day paces, sometimes if you pay attention to what's on the side, are you that person that you met, if you take the 10 minutes to talk to them, you're going to find out this whole other world exists that you didn't know anything about. And I mean, yeah. you know, I grew up straight white male in Southeast Missouri. You know, I've had interviews with LGBT folks that tell a completely different story of their Southeast Missouri experience. You know, years of wanting to get that wedding ring for your husband that he could not get, you know, waiting and waiting and waiting. Mm-hmm. And so it has shown me that, you know, even though we're right here in Southeast Missouri in America's heartland, we are as diverse as New York City, as San Francisco. All those things exist. They just tend to stay quieter here in the Midwest and in our Cape Girardeau area. And so I think these stories have helped people feel like, hey, you know what? That person told the story. Maybe I'll tell my story. Or maybe it's opening up their heart to hearing more of those stories. But I think it's really shown me that we are really just a diverse area. And there's just so much of untapped awesomeness just here in Southeast Missouri. And I hope I can find more of those stories and get more of those stories to other people. You know, whether it's somebody that's afraid to tell their story or somebody that can't, they're bursting at the seams to tell you how cool it is, you know, to be able to share those, I think is a lot of fun.
There's probably some, and there's, you know, that we all know folks who are just the best storytellers around. There's some folks that have just, and the way they would tell it would just be.
There's one guy. And it was not a story that I collected. I'm not the only one that collects the stories. And initially, like, Chris Edmonds got this one. And it's one of his neighbors. It's an older white gentleman. You know, you look at the picture of this guy, and he looks like the absolute Wilford Brimley cantankerous old white man in his yard. Oh, oatmeal, get off my yard, diabetes. You know, but his story was just phenomenal. And it wasn't a long story, but just his little nugget about, you know, you know, you can just picture him like, sit down, kids, and tell you a story, you know.
Yeah.
And I got a quote from that is, he said, one day my uncle and I went to pick up my dad from Jeff City in his 39 Plymouth. On his way back, when we got between Cape and Jackson, we got the news that the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor. The next thing I remember is all the men disappeared overnight. Wasn't nothing but my grandmother, a bunch of women, and some old men around. Nobody waited to get drafted. They all volunteered, including my dad and my two uncles. My dad and his oldest brother joined the Navy, and my youngest uncle, who was half Cherokee Indian, joined the Air Force. He was a gunner in a B-17 in Europe. And that segment of that story follows the reason they were going to Jeff City was to pick up his uncle for bootlegging. So, you know, it's just amazing to hear the color and everything that these stories have, for sure.
So talk about the future of the project, and you're looking for volunteers, I understand.
Yes, for sure. You know, COVID causes a big mess with everything, sure.
Right.
And you can imagine trying to start up a conversation with a stranger and get a little intimate and have a moment and get a picture. It's become very, very difficult during this time. So a lot of the stories you've seen in the last 6 months or so have been stories that I've regurgitated from initial posts when it was just getting on its feet. Maybe nobody had seen that one because we were just getting started.
Right.
So I'm trying to kind of get those back out. But collecting the stories has been tougher. I've been able to do some things virtually.
Mm-hmm.
The real kick for me is getting a good picture. The image is just so important to me. It captures everything that you're telling about that person. And so that's what I'm looking for. You know, we do pay, FYI, but what I'm looking for is story collectors who can take a good picture, have a good, you know, DSLR camera, can take a good photo, and then just have the time, the patience, the smile, and the compassion to talk to somebody for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, typically when I get a story, you won't see me write down anything. I may scratch their name so I don't forget it, but I carry a little digital recorder with me, and when it's time to have our conversation, I say, do you mind? I'm going to record this strictly for me. I learned very on in interviews, if you're quoting somebody, have a recording so you don't misquote them, and especially when you're telling their story. Yep. The stories you'll read on the website, the social media, any of that, they are 99% direct quote. I may edit for context just to spin it in where it needs to be or something like that, but I don't edit their grammar. I don't edit their speech form, any of that kind of stuff. That's their voice, because mm-hmm. that's what I wanted people to hear when they read it.
Right.
So if people are interested, have a good camera, be able to, you know, sit down, have a conversation, and then relay that conversation to me in a typewritten format. and that's about it. You know, I would love to have some story collectors on that want to be a part of this, that want to reach out to people. And again, like I mentioned, a lot of my stories are people that were my friends. You know, these are people that I know on a daily basis, but I don't know your best friend necessarily. So go get your best friend's story and then tell that to everybody that wants to read the stories.
So how can folks learn more about this?
Hit us on the web. Our website is humansofcape.com. We're also on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. But if they want to check them out, definitely hit up facebook.com/humansofcape, any of the Humans of Cape stuff, and the website.
Chief Human Darren Bergfeld, thank you, sir, for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate you having me.
To hear more interviews, visit krcu.org.